Lone Tree Girl Scouts create personal protective equipment for teachers and students. With just a few weeks before the beginning of the unique school year, Girl Scout Troop 65430 in Lone Tree reached out to its local elementary school to see how the girls could help. Within days, they helped flood the school with personal protective equipment. "We wanted to make things that would ease the tension of going back to school for staff and students," said Emma Bangerter, a fifth grader. "It was so moving to see this. We want to grow good humans, and we want to grow passionate people that do good for society. And to see that come in action and back to us was really, really heartwarming," said Wildcat Mountain Elementary Principal Molly Miley. "We really value at our school having small group and one-to-one interactions, and we didn't want anything to get in the way for that." Miley asked the troop for masks and 40 sneeze guards. "I had no idea how to build a sneeze guard or what a sneeze guard was," said Bangerter. "We watched a lot of videos and did a lot of research, and finally we found out how to make a sneeze guard." Within days, the 16 girls got to work. They made 70 masks for teachers, staff, and students, and 70 lanyards to hold masks. They also filled the order for 40 sneeze guards. Already in the first week of classes, they've become a vital resource for the school. "When we were taking tests, we used the sneeze guards. I felt proud that we had made a difference in our community," Bangerter said. "Walking through the halls, I saw people using these consistently. People utilizing these so they could have immediate conversations with our students," Miley said. "It really made so much more of a difference because they came from our students. They weren't something dropped off by the school district, but it was kids who cared about our school and our staff and want to make it the best place there is." Our next story is from First Coast News. 15-year-old Jacksonville boy refurbishes old computers, donates them to help students in need. While many will remember the summer of 2020 for the coronavirus pandemic, 15-year-old Christopher Kilpatrick will remember it as the summer he made an impact on his community. "I feel like I'm making a difference," said Kilpatrick. A rising sophomore at the Bowles School, the teenager had a summer internship at Urban Mining, a technology company. He understands that in today's learning environment, a computer is essential, but he also knows there is a digital divide between the have and the have not. "I almost had an epiphany when I realized not everyone can afford a computer," he said. Kilpatrick interned with Johnny McBurney's team at Urban Mining and saw an opportunity. "We get retired machines from businesses," said McBurney. The opportunity was to take some of those retired machines, and instead of them becoming salvage goods, he wanted to refurbish them and then donate them to close the digital divide. It became his summer project. "We kept him busy," said McBurney. "He was doing 4 to 5 machines a day." In the end, Kilpatrick would completely refurbish 20 desktop computers, and that includes monitors, programs, and other ancillary needs. "I installed various applications and made sure they are working," he said. Now those 20 computers will be donated to the nonprofit Big Brothers Big Sisters. "He knew his stuff," said McBurney. The honor student said there were lessons learned from his summer internship. He learned the lesson of giving and the lesson of good stewardship. "One great thing I learned from this is the importance of recycling," said Kilpatrick. And now his summer experience just may become the new expectation for future interns. "I think we started something really good here," said McBurney. The computers will be delivered sometime next week. And now we have 3 stories from the Today Show. "I'm not going to reopen my shuttered restaurant. I'd rather feed children in need." In the Bronx, New York City's poorest borough, 50% of food pantries and soup kitchens closed during the pandemic. "I remember it like it was yesterday. Friday, November 22, 2019, at my restaurant in the Bronx, New York. Millie, Pear Tree, Fish, Fry, and Soul Food. Just after receiving my weekend order of 150 pounds of whiting, 50 pounds of shrimp, and 50 pounds of catfish, I got the call that no restaurant owner ever wants to receive. Con Edison told me that they had no choice but to immediately shut off the gas line to my restaurant due to gas leaks and unauthorized gas plumbing work in the building. My first inclination was to ask the food gods if this was a prank, a bad joke. But after hearing nothing in response, I shook my head and sent my employees home indefinitely. Just months earlier, I had expanded my restaurant by taking over additional space in the building. More space, more customers, more employees. Steady growth is a good thing, right? After the initial shock of losing everything wore off, I went back to my true love, the private chef and catering world. I put pen to paper. I sent out emails and advised all my clients that Millie Pear Tree was back and available to provide private chef services in their homes and on the road. I booked several events, and it truly turned the tide of tragedy. I booked a large-scale catering event for this September for 1,200 people, my biggest event ever. But on March 9th, I received multiple emails from clients informing me that the events I was asked to cater would be put on hold until we figured out what was going on. From that point on, the hospitality industry started shuttering from the effects of COVID-19. The two questions I kept repeating over and over again in my head were, "Are you serious?" and "What now?" But I knew I could and would bounce back like I have so many times before. My original plan was to keep on as many of my 6 employees as possible with the catering prospects. But because of COVID-19, most had moved on to find other employment, and a few are still trying to bounce back from the pandemic's effect on their lives. A few weeks later, my dear friend Laura Brown, the editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine, reached out because she wanted to donate meals on behalf of her company. In a matter of months, Millie Pear Tree Catering had fed nearly 6,000 essential workers, including hospital staff, United States Post Office workers, MTA employees, and bodega workers, as well as protesters. As New York began to plan the various phases to open the city back up, I had an epiphany. I would pivot my efforts toward feeding children, because I knew that some of the city's food distribution programs had been canceled or reduced due to the pandemic. I created Full Heart, Full Bellies to provide prepared meals for children in grades K through 12 from July 6th to August 28th in the Bronx, which is the poorest of the 5 boroughs. In the Bronx, 31% of all children live in food insecure homes, according to a 2015 report by the NYC Coalition Against Hunger. That means 1 in 3 children do not know where their next meal is coming from. And according to new data from the Food Bank for NYC, 50% of food pantries and soup kitchens closed during the pandemic, and 90% of those are in the highest need communities. With many summer programs canceled due to COVID-19, we want to assure that children have at least one hot meal 3 times a week to fill their bellies and help close the city's ever-expanding meal gap. We provide the children with composed meals of 6 ounces of lean protein, 4 ounces of fresh vegetables, and 4 ounces of starch, serving everything from jerk chicken with rice and peas to roasted turkey, cabbage, sweet potato mash, and roasted zucchini. These kids deserve great-tasting food, a sense of comfort during such a tumultuous time. We served 600 meals 3 times a week throughout the summer and 1,800 meals each week to families in need. With the help of our delivery partner, Audi, kitchen space donated by Amazon, support from restaurant associates, water and juices from Coca-Cola, pasta from Barilla, muffins from Bread Gal Bakery in New Jersey, meal pickup location coordination by nonprofit Share for Life, donations to our GoFundMe by ordinary folks, and volunteers from all over the city. My team and I just learned that Amazon has agreed to continue our hospitality partnership until December. By then, we'll have shared 14,400 meals to kids in need and an additional 2,500 to nursing homes in the Bronx. But we hope to keep going after that. The goal is to feed children and their families for an entire school year, providing 250,000 meals over 10 months. When we talk about social justice, we often get hung up on the hashtag instead of the actual work. You may not march, but maybe you can feed a protester. After the money is donated, what can we do in the community to change things? As I told NBC New York recently, I don't have the most, but I don't have the least either. I just feel like as human beings, we should give what we can. You never know when any of us could be in a situation when we need something. Millie Peartree is a world-renowned chef and tastemaker who has spent the last decade perfecting her craft. It wasn't until she entered her first baking contest that she realized her baking and now culinary talent that would evolve into a successful and innovative culinary enterprise. Millie's Cupcakes was her flagship business. Today, she is a respected A-list celebrity personal chef, former restaurateur, and cupcake extraordinaire. Millie's new adventure is to help children in need, as her motto is, "I don't have the most, and I don't have the least." She believes we must uplift and help one another because we never know when our time may come, and we may need some help. Now, here's another article from the Today Show. Animal rescue organization offers free on-site tutoring for workers' kids during pandemic. At California's Helen Woodward Animal Center, K-10 students can join virtual classrooms with in-person assistants and play with animals during breaks. By Jen Reeder. When schools abruptly closed in March due to the coronavirus pandemic, California resident Laura Smith found herself in the same position as millions of working parents, juggling a full-time job while teaching her children. What I realized is it's a full-time job to do the distance learning, and then you're working at the same time, she told Today. I'm not a teacher. I don't have a professional experience in that or a degree in that, and it's basically impossible to keep them on track and also work. So she was immensely relieved to learn the nonprofit Helen Woodward Animal Center, where she works as an executive assistant, would be offering free educational assistance to employees while schools are closed for in-person learning. Licensed teachers will be available on-site to tutor students in grades K-10 taking online classes on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, starting August 20th. During breaks, the kids can interact with animals cared for at the 12-acre property, which include dogs, cats, mini horses, chickens, rabbits, ducks, goats, and snakes. Smith looks forward to driving to and from work with Delphine and Brody, the fourth graders she's raising with her boyfriend, and seeing them during lunch. Mainly, though, she's grateful for the opportunity. I'm excited that they're going to get to be around other kids in a safe, CDC-compliant manner, and I believe they're going to be having some fun animal encounters, so that's wonderful, she said. This is such a blessing for them academically and for their emotional well-being. It really is. Mike Arms, president and CEO of Helen Woodward Animal Center, decided to create the program when he saw tears on the faces of his team of 170 employees right after California Governor Gavin Newsom announced that virtually all school campuses would be closed in the fall. Arms didn't want them to have to choose between their jobs and their kids. what better way to help them than to let the children come here with them and have teachers here to help them with their online learning? We work together as a family, so let's take care of our family, he told Today. Helen Woodward Animal Center, founded in 1972 in Rancho Santa Fe, California, just north of San Diego, rescues and rehomes animals, offers educational and therapeutic programs for people, and operates a veterinary hospital with a mobile clinic to serve pets of the homeless. Arms was impressed by the dedication of his team during the onset of the pandemic. My staff was not going to turn their back on animals, so they came in, he said. We never closed one day because the animals needed us. I couldn't ask for better people. The educational assistance program is available to any of the center's employees, whether they work full-time, part-time, or on-call. So far, 14 children have enrolled. They'll attend school in 5 specially built classrooms with students and teachers physically distanced and following local, state, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention protocols. Each desk will be surrounded on 3 sides by plexiglass so students won't have to wear masks except in hallways, bathrooms, and other common areas. Arms said providing the learning environment not only helps students and parents, but the community at large, because services can continue, from pet adoptions to therapeutic horse riding for people recovering from strokes. At the center's Animeals program, which coordinates free pet food delivery to low-income seniors, military veterans with disabilities, and the homeless, expanded this year to include anyone laid off due to the pandemic. Every 2 weeks, unemployed people can pick up free food for their pets and food for themselves, thanks to a partnership with the nonprofit Feeding San Diego. Just to be able to feed their pets so they don't have to relinquish them, that's a big thing, he said. And now they can feed their family. Arms hopes other businesses, both nonprofits and for-profits, will think outside the box to find ways to support working parents and their children while schools are closed. It's a win-win for companies to let the employees know we care, we're going to be there for you. There is no greater way than to help them with their children, he said. We have to remember that through all of this fighting going on in this country, the smallest ones, the children, have to be taken care of. If we focus on that, I think we might make it through the next generation a lot better. Now, here's a third story from the Today Show. Blind teen swimmer and guide dog make perfect pair in Paralympics quest. Anastasios Pagonis hopes to represent the USA in the 2021 Paralympics in Tokyo with her guide dog, Radar, by her side. By Jen Reeder. New York resident Anastasia Pagonis cheered for the New York Islanders long before she had any idea the professional hockey team would raise a guide dog for her. But when she was 14 years old, around the time a little Labrador retriever named Radar became her first puppy with a purpose for the Isles, Pagonis rapidly lost her vision over the course of 2 months. Being a teenage girl is hard, so having that on top of it was just such a struggle for me, she told Today. It took me about 8 months to kind of regroup myself, and then I got it in my head. Okay, I'm blind. Now what am I going to do with my life? The answer? Competitive swimming. The mid-distance freestyler had just taken up the sport about 6 months before losing her sight and dove back in. It's my happy place. It's the place where I feel like I don't have a disability, and I feel like that's the only place where I am where I feel free. When I dive in the water, it's just me in the pool, and I feel such a connection with it. Pagonis, now 16, has racked up impressive victories, including 2 gold medals at the World Para Swimming World Series in Australia just before the coronavirus pandemic shut things down. Then she got a call from the nonprofit Guide Dog Foundation about partnering with Radar, who was ready to be a guide dog. Because of the pandemic, Pagonis and Radar trained together for several hours each morning at her home for about 10 days. Then on August 19th, they officially teamed up. Having Radar has just given me so much independence, and I'm literally in love with him. He's the best thing ever, she said. We're a match made in heaven. Recently, Radar traveled with Pagonis to the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where the teen is training with other top athletes for the 2021 Paralympics in Tokyo. The 2021 Paralympics will be broadcast by our parent company, NBC Universal. After just a week, the smart dog learned familiar routes while helping guide Pagonis around the campus. Pretty much if I'm coming from my dorm room, I'll say, Radar, forward, find the elevator. And he'll go down a bunch of hallways and make a few turns, and he'll find the elevator, she said. If I didn't have Radar, I would have to glide against the wall and bump into a bunch of things, and it would honestly be pretty impossible for me to find the elevator without asking for help, because I have no eyes. So he's pretty much like my eyes. Radar is a hit with the other athletes, who already know him by name. Everyone thinks he's the best, she said. I feel so blessed that I was able to come out here with some of the top elite athletes in the country. I feel like everyone in the Paralympics is such an amazing fighter, and we're all just awesome. She hopes to win gold in Tokyo for her golden puppy. And of course, she's not the only one. Ann Rena, Senior Director of Community Relations for the New York Islanders, said the team has requested updates on Radar and Pagonis while they travel the world together. Radar was hugely popular with both players and fans, who would stand in long lines to meet him at games. For his part, Radar loved meeting fans and was particularly fond of the team mascot, Sparky the Dragon. The two even showcased their affection on the Kiss Cam. She's thrilled that Radar partnered with an athlete from a family of Islanders fans and whose club swim team is called Islanders Aquatics. But most importantly, she's glad they gel so well together. I could tell it was the right match when they met, she told Today. We wish them great luck over in Tokyo. Not only is Radar representing the U.S. in Tokyo, but he's representing the Islanders, too. John Miller, president and CEO of Guide Dog Foundation and its sister organization, America's Vet Dogs, said because all of the nonprofit services are free of charge to clients, donors and volunteers across the country are vital. He's grateful to sports teams and Today for Puppy with a Purpose programs that spotlight puppy raising. The high-profile programs like Today and the partnership we have with the Islanders and other sports teams absolutely go a long way to shine a light on the services that are available, the need for volunteerism, and the good work that the dogs ultimately wind up doing once they're placed, he told Today. He's glad Radar has already made such a difference for Pagonis, calling them a perfect pair. Our entire organization will be rooting for Anastasia, he said. All of our clients are special, and it motivates us here every day to see the differences in their lives once they receive their dogs, and the impact the dog has had on them and their families. Now here's a story that's closer to us. This is from Reuters. Woman living in her car brings sandwiches and love to the homeless of Houston. After quitting her job, Dominic Sejon Walton now lives in her car delivering bags of food with encouraging notes to the homeless of Houston. Dominic Sejon Walton spots a man with a shopping cart piled high with belongings and a sign that says, Homeless, please help, under a Texas highway overpass. With the coronavirus keeping many at home, the road is quieter than usual. She hands him a plastic bag filled with a bologna and cheese sandwich, cookies, and applesauce. On the outside, she has written in permanent blue marker, God bless. Jesus loves you. I love you. Walton knows what it is like to be homeless and hungry. She is currently living mainly in her car, sleeping at her sister's apartment in Houston sometimes. I started serving meals to the homeless because I understand what it's like not to know where your next meal is going to come from, and that's the least that I feel like we can do for our community, is give back, said the 27-year-old. Walton's car became her home after she became depressed following surgery for an ectopic pregnancy. She quit her job as a gas station cashier and is now living in the 2010 Chevrolet Malibu, trying to save enough money to start a t-shirt business featuring her own designs. She was recently hired by a nonprofit organization that distributes meals to low-income families. In many U.S. cities, homeless people are spending their nights on empty trains or camping behind closed businesses and under deserted highways. Many fear to enter homeless shelters where the coronavirus can spread fast. Walton drives around and spots a man sitting on the ground. "Hello, sir," she calls out, her big smile hidden behind the surgical mask she wears. He does not respond, perhaps dozing. So she touches his elbow with her gloved hand to give him some food. Walton buys the groceries herself or uses leftovers from her employer, making the bags in her sister's apartment where her one-year-old and four-year-old nieces play. When she is done for the day, she parks her car near a mall, park, or just a quiet neighborhood, propping her cell phone against the car window while she stretches out on the front seat. Her dreams? A t-shirt business so successful that she can give away even more food. Now here's a similar story from CBS News by Mira Villarreal. Father and son help nonprofit to serve meals with a side of human kindness. From 8 to 11 a.m., Keith Branch passes out meals, nourishment for the body and the soul, while remembering the golden rule and his faith. "He's not going to be thrilled with me if I don't do what I'm supposed to do," Branch said to his son Keith while pointing to God and sorting food. Branch works with Kids Bring Life, a nonprofit intended to feed children facing food insecurity. However, with the coronavirus pandemic and a stalled economy, millions of families find themselves in need of food. So Kids Bring Life began feeding all children, young and old. "People are trying to figure out how they're going to provide for their families and feed their children," said Branch. Branch and his 15-year-old son give out 50 meals a day, 5 days a week. The nonprofit has 40 locations around Dallas. CBS News spoke with Janelle Hicks, operations manager for Kids Bring Life, and asked her how many meals are prepared a day. "We are doing about 2,000 to 3,000 a day," said Hicks. "There's definitely an escalation. I see more people that are just thankful. Some people that are using money for bills. Now they don't have to use it on the food. It makes me feel very good, like there's people out there that really care about each other," one food recipient said. The coronavirus has taken so much from so many, but it has given Branch and his son the opportunity to practice what he preaches by doing unto others who need a serving of human kindness and love. "You never know who you're going to touch," said Branch. "And if you just believe that God put you out here for a purpose, you're going to inspire somebody." And here's another Texas-based article, this also from CBS News, by Chris Van Cleve. Woman shares cards of kindness with travelers at Houston Airport during pandemic. An airport may be one of the last places people would expect to find random acts of kindness, but one frequent flyer is doing what she can to lift spirits. Holding a handful of homemade happiness, Catherine Knight is hoping to change the world one kind word at a time. "I just want somebody's day to be better," said Knight. "I really just want to make the world a better place." While traveling for work, she's handing out cards to strangers at the Houston airport. Each card contains a message meant to shine a bit of light into these dark days. "You have to wear a mask, so you can't see somebody smile or if they're sad," said Knight. "So if you watch somebody's eyes, you can kind of determine maybe that person needs a little pick-me-up." "People need to know that there's still kindness in this world," she added. But in the age of COVID-19, you can't blame Heidi Botkin for being a little skeptical until the message sunk in. "I was super stressed out when I get the three kids by myself," said Botkin. "So yeah, that was a nice little pick-me-up." This Random Act of Kindness project started 3 years ago. Knight and her son Parker write uplifting messages for people they've never met and may never see again. More than 25,000 have been written so far, including one for pilot Michael Jones. "It helped, you know. I think everybody's having their own personal struggles right now," said Jones. "At a time when we have to stay apart, this is a small reminder that we're all still in this together." This is another story from CBS News. 3-year-old bakes and delivers more than 1,000 cookies for frontline and essential workers, by Caitlin O'Kane. A 3-year-old from Stillwater, New York, has used her passion for baking to help bring joy to others during the coronavirus pandemic. Mia Villa and her mom, Devin Villa, have baked over 1,000 cookies since the start of the pandemic and delivered them to frontline and essential workers, her mom told CBS News via email. "Mia has been helping me in the kitchen since she could stand up at the counter," Villa said. "I have pictures back as far as 18 months old. That was roughly when I started helping my mom as a kid, and the same time she began to show interest in what I was doing, so I let her jump right in." "We've made a lot of messes, but that is the fun in learning," Villa continued, adding that Mia has mastered her chocolate chip cookies. Villa said she recognized the pressure on essential workers and first responders during the pandemic and wanted to do something to help. "I was trying to think of something fun to do with Mia that would allow me to teach her valuable lessons in being kind, grateful, and generous," Villa said. She decided to use baking, something they were already doing about twice a week, to help teach Mia that lesson. Mia and her mom call their little operation Cookie Kindness because they deliver cookies to people who could use kindness and a smile, Villa said. "Smiles and kindness are contagious. I truly believe that, and the world needs more of it," she said. They still bake at least twice a week, sometimes three, and bring batches of cookies to places where frontline employees work. "So far, we have been to fire stations, hospitals, primary care doctors, EMTs, police stations, an animal hospital, and a supermarket," Villa said. Villa created a Facebook page, Mia's Cookie Jar, where she updates followers on their cookie deliveries. "We started out locally, going to places around home, and then started getting suggestions from Mia's cookie followers," she continued. "I love when we go somewhere that has personally impacted a cookie follower. It makes the deliveries even more special." Sometimes that seems so simple, like delivering cookies truly can make someone's day, the mom said. Villa said everyone who has received their cookies has been welcoming, showing Mia how an ambulance works, letting her inside fire trucks, and letting her meet police canines and horses. She said Mia has loved baking for essential workers, and they have no plans of stopping. "The opportunities for lessons in kindness are endless, and expands so far beyond places she is going right now, and who doesn't love a homemade chocolate chip cookie," Villa said. And now, this article from CBS News. Bride and groom who canceled wedding reception due to COVID-19 donate food to shelter, by Caitlin O'Kane. When Tyler and Melanie Tapania canceled their wedding reception due to COVID-19, they didn't let the food they ordered go to waste. The Ohio couple decided to take their wedding dinner, which was catered by a food truck, to Laura's Home, a shelter for women and children in need. Laura's Home Women's Crisis Center is part of the Ohio nonprofit The City Mission, which helps people overcome homelessness. About 70 kids currently attend the Cleveland-based program with their mothers. The City Mission CEO, Rich Trickle, told CBS News he doesn't believe the Pachanias have volunteered at the organization before, but they have reached out before their wedding day to see if they could help. Melanie Tapanias told CBS News they decided to cancel their reception due to COVID-19 and received a full refund from the venue. "We also took into account the concerns of our families possibly getting sick. We did not want to risk anything," she said via Facebook. "We were able to have a 100% refund on the food. We chose to donate it instead," she added. Melanie and her now husband, Tyler, held their ceremony on August 15th, and right after tying the knot, they went to Laura's Home to get to work. The food truck that was catering their wedding set up the food in the Laura's Home kitchen, and the bride and groom helped serve the meal while still wearing a wedding dress and tux. Like you would do at a regular wedding reception, they came out from the kitchen and moved around the dining room and greeted the women and children, Trickle told CBS News. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, the bride, groom, and their photographer were the only visitors allowed inside during the meal. In total, the couple gave out about 100 meals to the kids and their moms. Their wedding photos include shots of them in the kitchen and walking around to tables, as well as some of the smiling faces of the kids at Laura's Home. "It's not unusual for us to have volunteers serving meals in our building, but certainly this was not common, and it caused quite a stir," Trickle said. "I remember a mom and her two little daughters coming up in the line, and the two little girls standing on their tiptoes to get a better glimpse of the bride in her wedding dress," he continued. And this, also from CBS, "Woman gets job as dishwasher at senior care facility so she can see her husband with Alzheimer's," by Caitlin O'Kane. Mary Daniel hadn't seen her husband for 114 days due to coronavirus restrictions at the senior care facility where she lives. So when she was told she could see him if she worked there as a dishwasher, she seized the opportunity. Her husband Steve was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 7 years ago and moved into a care facility in Jacksonville, Florida last July, Daniel told CBS News on Friday. "I put him in a memory care center, and everything was going really, really well. He was thriving with all the people," she said. And in March, obviously everything changed. She said she had been visiting her husband every night and would get him ready for bed. But when the coronavirus pandemic hit, hospitals and other health facilities restricted visitors as a way to prevent the spread of COVID-19 to vulnerable patients. The facility closed to visitors on March 11th, the last time she saw Steve as a visitor. Not knowing how long the lockdown would last, she wanted to find a way to see her husband regularly and decided to get creative. "Originally, I sent an email to the executive director saying, 'Okay, what do I need to do to get in there? Can I volunteer? Can I bring a therapy dog? Can I get a job?'" Daniel told CBS News. The facility didn't know how long the restrictions would last either, and didn't take Daniel up on her offers at first. By the 16-week mark, she was becoming restless. She decided to take more action and began writing to local and state officials, urging them to end the isolation of patients in senior care facilities. "We have separated these folks to save them, but we have separated them, and it's going to kill them. The isolation will absolutely kill them," Daniel said. "Especially dementia patients. They need interaction. They need to be touched. Their brain needs to be stimulated so that they can grow instead of just really wither away." She was worried about her husband spending so much time alone and said his behavior changed in quarantine. "He actually had an altercation with one of the other residents and that's an indicator of the stress, she said. I've never seen him get in an altercation with anyone. She was able to see Steve twice during this time, standing outside of his room, but being separated by a window made him upset. I think it's worse when he sees me than when he doesn't see me, she said. She decided not to visit her husband that way anymore, but said she was desperate to find another way to stay connected. Out of the blue, 2 weeks ago, the corporate office of his memory care center called me and said, "We've got a part-time job available. Would you like to take it?" Daniel said. She was willing to do any job they offered for the chance to get inside, and what they ended up giving her was a dishwashing position. The job is allowing Daniel to see her husband regularly, and she's grateful for it. Especially since this week, Governor Ron DeSantis extended the state's emergency order for 60 days, which also extends the visitor restrictions. It has been such an amazing blessing. I've seen him 3 times, Daniel said. I'm working 2 days a week, and it is the real deal. It is 100% legit. I had to get a background screening, fingerprints, a TB test, COVID-19 test, a drug test, 20 hours worth of training, a video on everything from food safety to hazardous waste disposal. Daniel said all of the care center's employees must also get tested for coronavirus every 2 weeks. But since her brother-in-law is a physician who can administer the test, she plans on getting them more frequently. It is worth it to be able to visit him, and I can already just tell the difference in his demeanor after 3 visits, she said. I get to go again tonight. It has made the world of difference for me. Daniel said her husband is not able to articulate through words, so the way they communicate is by showing affection. There's a comfort that comes from me being with him, from me holding his hand, she said. That's how we are able to love, and I'm able to comfort him now. And I see him settling into that. I noticed it last night that he was very relaxed as he was getting ready for bed. She said her husband now feels love, something he missed out on when they were separated. However, she still hopes the isolation policy for patients will end. I'm so grateful. I am so lucky and fortunate, but I want to be with him every day, she said. Daniel also started a Facebook page to advocate for patient rights during the pandemic. It's really, really a very, very difficult situation that so many families are in, and I hope that one of the things this story tells is not just about my success of us being creative, but the plight of so many others that don't have the blessing I have. We need to find a way. There has to be a better way to do this than complete isolation, she said. Now here's a story from the Washington Post. This New York executive was laid off. Now he mows lawns for seniors for free. By Kathy Free. 2 days after Brian Schwartz was laid off from his job over the summer as a digital advertising executive, he knew he had to make some changes in order to save his mental health. It was a stressful time, and I realized that it would be easy to get depressed sitting home in quarantine with this big curveball thrown into my life, said Schwartz, 39, who lives in Wayne, New Jersey, with his wife and infant son. One of the things I was concerned with was having a gap in my resume, he said. I wondered what I could do to help fill in the time. Schwartz, who didn't receive a severance package when he was let go from his firm in New York, said his thoughts were drawn to his grandfather, who had recently died. Perhaps there was something he could do for seniors during the pandemic. I'd gone out to mow my lawn, and it felt therapeutic. It was a good workout and helped me to clear my mind, he said. So I thought, that's it. I'll give back by mowing lawns and doing yard work for people who are having trouble doing it on their own. A couple of days later, Schwartz developed a website, I Want to Mow Your Lawn, and sent a news release to local television stations with his offer to mow lawns free of charge for anyone age 65 and older, Then he sat back and waited for the calls to come in. He didn't wait long. His first call came from an elderly woman in Verona, New Jersey. Her son usually took care of her lawn, she told Schwartz, but he was swamped at work and hadn't been able to mow it in weeks. Would he mind dropping by to trim her grass? I'll be right there, Schwartz said he told her. He loaded his gasoline-powered mower and edger into the back of his Jeep and drove 30 miles to Verona. She tried to tip me afterwards, he said, adding that he politely declined. That would take away the fun of doing it for free. Instead, as other calls came in, Schwartz provided links to some of his favorite charities on his website, including the Children's Eye Foundation and American Brain Tumor Association, along with a way for people to pitch in for his gas. 3 months into his self-described edgy venture, Schwartz now mows lawns throughout northern New Jersey at no charge for 25 clients and has a handful of volunteers to help him keep up with the demand. When I was a kid, I didn't mow lawns, but I went door to door with my friends to shovel snow off everyone's driveway, he said. It felt good to do it. He said he has a similar feeling now, which is why he plans to keep it up. That would be fine with his clients. Schwartz's generosity is a cut above, they said. He's the nicest, most respectful guy in the world, said Lois Reichert, 73, of West Orange, New Jersey. He's been out twice, and I already feel like he's a good friend. Reichert has a pacemaker and has had more than 18 surgeries, she said. The grass in her yard and the weeds in her garden were so overgrown, I couldn't even see the Blessed Mother out there, said Reichert. Brian came out and mowed the lawn for free, then came back and did all of the weeding, she said. What can I say? He's a gift. Another client, Pam Nardella, had tried to mow her lawn in Elmwood Park, New Jersey, but it was such a laborious and time-consuming task due to her need for a knee replacement, she said. As you get older, things like lawn mowing become more cumbersome, said Nardella, 73. When she learned about Schwartz's free service in her local paper, she contacted him. My lawn has never looked more terrific, she said. In addition to mowing three or four lawns a week and weeding garden beds, Schwartz keeps the grass trimmed at his own home and spends time with his wife, Jennifer Schwartz, 29, and his two-month-old son, Dylan. First, I thought he was crazy, Jennifer said of her husband's volunteer venture. It's a stressful time giving birth during a global pandemic and having your husband lose his job, but he has my full support. Seeing the happiness he brings to his clients is truly inspiring. Although the Schwartzes are now 2 months behind on their mortgage, they've been able to get by on Jennifer's paycheck from her job in the finance industry and Brian's monthly unemployment checks. These are difficult times. There are people going through more stress than we are right now, Brian said. I'm finding great meaning and purpose in pushing a mower around to help others. And here's an article that comes from Yahoo News. Separated on their anniversary, man honors wife of 67 years outside nursing home, by Rachel Paula Abramson. A photo of an elderly man separated from his wife on their 67th wedding anniversary amid the coronavirus outbreak has the internet in tears. In the picture, Bob Shellard is seen standing outside Nancy Shellard's nursing home window in Stafford Springs, Connecticut, holding a glittery homemade sign that reads, "I've loved you 67 years and still do. Happy anniversary." Shellard spent a week perfecting the poster that is decorated with a big red heart. He also came bearing a bouquet of orange, yellow, pink, and purple balloons. Last Saturday marked the first time that the Shellards weren't able to celebrate their March 14th anniversary in person. Earlier this month, Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont signed an order that let the Department of Public Health restrict visitation at nursing home facilities. It makes me feel bad because I want her down with me, and I know she can't be, Shellard told NBC affiliate WNBC in New York. After an image of Shellard clutching his placard was shared on Twitter, it quickly went viral with over 52,000 retweets. Some people compared him to Lloyd Dobler, played by John Cusack, who stood outside Diane Court's window with a boombox in the 1989 romantic comedy Say Anything. The couple's daughter, Laura Mikolajak, said her dad visited her mother every day up until the COVID-19 precautions went into effect last week. They have always been an inspiration to us, she said. There's just a sweetness to the two of them and what they share. This also comes from Yahoo News. Ohio siblings play cello for self-quarantined elderly neighbor. Amid the coronavirus pandemic, social distancing, and the shutdown of schools, restaurants, and bars has led to a huge disruption of American life. Two cello-playing Ohio siblings forged a genuine human connection during the period of isolation when they cheered up an elderly neighbor who said she had not left her house for the last 5 days. Helena Schlamm, a 78-year-old Columbus, Ohio resident living on her own, had self-quarantined and limited herself to her home and backyard, CBS News' Vladimir Dulthiers reports. She refused an offer from her neighbor, Rebecca Tien, who asked if Schlamm needed groceries picked up. Looking for other ways to help her isolated neighbor, Tien turned to her children, 9-year-old Taryn and 6-year-old Calliope. The pair was told by their cello instructor to practice virtual concerts at home in order to adhere to social distancing. Helena really loves music, so I asked if the kids could come to the porch, Tien said. So Schlamm joined the children outside at a responsible distance and watched as they played their cellos for her. She knows I love music, and I really like her kids. They're terrific, Schlamm said. We love playing the cello for other people, Taryn Tien said. Then we thought about how she was stuck in her house, so we thought it was a great idea and might make her happy. To Schlamm, happy was an understatement. Well, I was just thrilled. I sort of feel like a little kid, she said. And that is your coronavirus update for this Friday, September 18th, 2020, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Here's what's coming up today on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. At 2 o'clock, national news from USA Today. At 3 o'clock, local news. Here are some of the articles that our volunteers will be reading today. From the Midland Reporter-Telegram, committee decides on Legacy of Equality and Excellence, LEE, as top pick for Lehigh. Texas Oil and Gas Association virtual summit focuses on Permian and the Panhandle. Payton says Midland is open for business. MISD checking no-show lists ahead of recovery walk. From the Odessa American, ORMC mulling hospital visitors. Football tickets to be sold at Ratliff. Odessa City Council District 2. Minor looking for major change. Those stories and more at 3 o'clock with our local newspaper broadcast. At 6 o'clock, we'll bring you more news with the Wall Street Journal. And at 7 o'clock, as we bring you every Friday, on the lighter side. This show features articles, essays, stories, and more from humorous authors to end the week on a fun note. And we hope that you've enjoyed this special hour of the coronavirus update featuring only good news related to the pandemic. Thank you very much for joining us as we do every week. On Fridays, we leave you with a song. Today, we're going to lift you up with the Temptations. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. You got a smile so bright. You know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight. You know you could have been a handle. The way you swept me off the beat. Smell so next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie.
My husband is, well, he's required to speak publicly.
The King's Speech.
I have received
perhaps he should change jobs.
And what of my husband with a king? My husband has seen everyone.
Insert them into your mouth. All but enunciate.
He hasn't seen me. I can cure your husband, but I need total trust.
Get up! You can't sit there! Get up!
Why not? It's a chair.
That is St. Edward's chair.
People have carved their names.
Listen to me! Listen to me!
Why should I waste my time listening to
you? Because I have a voice!
Yes, you do.
Jeffrey Rush, Helena Bonham Carter, and Academy Award winner Colin Firth star in the audio-described 2011 Best Picture of the Year, The King's Speech. Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 79 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-60s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Liz Hill, and this is USA Today. First article of the morning is titled Coronavirus Updates. Las Vegas bars, breweries to reopen Sunday. Texas eases business restrictions. India reports 96,000 more cases in 24 hours. Written by Jessica Flores. With the U.S. approaching 200,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths and worldwide infections toppling 30 million, Texas and Nevada are set to ease restrictions for some businesses beginning this weekend. In Texas, which is close to becoming the second state with 700,000 cases, Governor Greg Abbott is authorizing some businesses, including restaurants, retail stores, gyms, and museums, to open up to 75% capacity starting Monday. Bars, however, must remain closed. In Nevada, public health officials are allowing bars in and around Las Vegas to reopen on Sunday after being